Welcome in to the 48 Minutes Podcast by Belief, where you stay up to date in 48 on all things NBA. I'm Ross Geiger, joined alongside Bruce Bernstein of Pure Hoops Media and World B, Michael Freer. This is episode number 29, the Paul Silas episode, as Paul wore number 29 for seven of his first eight seasons in the NBA. Bruce, how do you feel about Paul Silas being tonight's episode honoree?
The very first NBA game I ever went to was in November of 1966, the Celtics against the St. Louis Hawks. Paul Silas was on that team, and I guess he was probably wearing number 29 that night. Of course, he ended up becoming a beloved Boston Celtics, but I'm always, always happy to invoke his name.
Awesome. And with that, we'll get right into our opening tip and start with you, World B.
Thank you, Ross. On Tuesday, the Knicks lost their captain with the passing of Willis Reed at age 80. Teammate Earl Monroe referred to Reed as, quote, our heart. There's probably no more beloved Knick in the history of the franchise than the captain, who spent all 10 of his NBA seasons in a Knick uniform, winning the league's MVP award in 1970, along with the All-Star Game MVP and the NBA Finals MVP that season. He was the leader of the Knicks during their glory days of the early to mid-70s when they won the championship, their only championships in 1970 and 73. It was Reed that provided the NBA with one of its signature moments when he summoned up all the heart and courage that he could muster to bring himself and his one good leg out of the locker room and on the court in Madison Square Garden for Game 7 of the 1970 NBA Finals, inspiring his teammates and energizing the home crowd, while at the same time leaving the Lakers players stunned in disbelief with what's going on. NBA fans know how the rest of the story goes. On May 8, 1970, Reed hit his first two shots of the game, the only two he would hit, and the Knicks were off and rolling. It was Walt Frazier that was the star of that game, with 36 points and 19 assists, but it was Reed's presence that stole the show and left an everlasting memory in the Knicks fans and NBA fans alike. It was simply the greatest moment in the history of the Knicks franchise. And there always will be debates on who the greatest Knicks player of all time was, and they're all fair and fun to do, but there should never be any debate on who the greatest franchise captain was. Because that was number 19.
Well said, World B, and our thoughts and prayers go out to the Reed family, as well as the Knicks organization and the NBA community during this time. Bruce, what do you have for an opening tip?
Well, let me just tag on real quick about Willis Reed. There's such a thing that's known as a culture carrier. He was a culture carrier. He created it, he nurtured it, and he passed it on to all those Knicks that followed. So, yeah, even a Celtics fan like myself can truly understand the depth of his contribution. So, yeah, well done there, World Free. I think you did him, World B, I think you did him justice. My opening comment has to do with my team, the Boston Celtics. They're a team with two superstars and a number of what I like to call superstar role players. One of them is Robert Williams III, also known as the Time Lord. Williams has always struggled to stay healthy. He's missed 44 of Boston's 73 games this season. And when he was injured on March 3rd and missed eight games, the team could only win four of them. And, you know, they slipped further behind the Bucks in the East. But he returned on Tuesday against the Kings, and his presence was felt immediately. He didn't put up big numbers, but you could see how he affected the team. His defense in the paint deterred easy buckets by the Kings, and his passing on the perimeter kept the ball moving and helped the offense look like it did in January and February when the Celtics were steamrolling opponents like a possible championship team. The Celtics struggled but hung in there when the Time Lord was hurt, but they looked like world beaters against a really solid Sacramento team. So if Williams can stay healthy the rest of the way, which is a big if, they'll be a very tough team to beat in the playoffs, Ross.
Yeah, and I got to give a hat tip to you and obviously congratulate you on that win. As I did say, there were going to be bragging rights on the line. So job well done by the Boston Celtics in Sacktown the other night. As for my opening tip, for all those Wordle fans out there, there are, of course, also NBA fans listening to our show. There is a NBA Wordle out on the streets now that I want to make sure you guys are bringing to your attention. And that is called podal.dunk.town. So if you type that into your URL, you're going to be able to check that out. And one second here. I want to play along with you guys here tonight on tonight's Wordle. Let's get that up. Yeah. Hope you guys are ready for this. So the game gives you 8 guesses and is a vague outline. It also gives you the vague outline of a player profile picture. All right. And so as you guess the player, it will tell you if you picked a player on the right team, in the right division, in the right conference, as well as their bio of position, height, age, and jersey number. So for fun, I'm going to leave it up to a competition between you, Bruce, and World B to play alongside here. And here's today's player. And I'll tell you, he's in the Western Conference. He plays in the Pacific Division. He's a shooting guard. He's 6'7". He's 24 years old. And he wears number 9. And he's on the Sacramento Kings. Any guesses?
Kevin Huerter.
That is correct. Bruce Woo-hoo! With the win here in today's NBA Wordle. So go ahead and check that out, NBA fans. It's, again, podal.dunk.town, and it's NBA Wordle. So that is the opening tip, and let's get right into our first quarter. We've got an action-packed show here tonight, and we're going to first start off talking about returning stars in Karl-Anthony Towns and Ja Morant. Bruce, why don't you lead us off?
Well, Karl-Anthony Towns returned to the Wolves on Wednesday against the Hawks, and he had himself a game. 22 points, the 2 clinching free throws in the final seconds, and a post-game interview that can only be described as euphoric. I mean, he was on the public address system talking to the Bally Sports reporter. And, I mean, I have never seen anybody so fired up for a post-game interview in my life. The crowd was going nuts. It was the first time the Wolves had won a home game in, like, a while. So they were ready to explode. And, look, I mean, Cat is a unique character, man. He's an all-star player. He won the 3-point shootout all-star weekend last year. I mean, this dude is a baller. And I'm excited to see what the Wolves can do. And, oh, by the way, Naz Reid also had an excellent game for those guys, too. He's rapidly becoming one of my favorite players for that team and around the league.
World B, any takeaways from that game and Karl-Anthony Towns' return?
Well, you know, in 26 minutes, Minnesota, when he was on the court, Minnesota outscored Atlanta by almost 20 points per 100 possessions. So he obviously had a tremendous impact in this game. You expect that from a superstar like that. They were a team high plus 13 when he was on the court. And, you know, which is, it's hard to believe, but before he got hurt and missed all that time, Minnesota was actually getting outscored per 100 possessions by just about a point per 100 possessions when Karl-Anthony Towns was on the court. That's a real weird thing for to think about with such a great player, but you know, they're going to need him. They got a humongous road test coming up beginning Sunday, where they go to Golden State, Sacramento, and Phoenix. So it's all, you know, this time of the year, it's all hands on deck out in the West. And, you know, they need, if there was ever a team that needed as many players as possible, it's Minnesota.
Yeah, I totally agree. And kind of going back to you, Bruce, is talking about what a baller he is, having won the 3-point shootout. This guy has definitely got an ego, too. He said that he crowned himself the best 7-foot shooter of all time in that post-game interview after winning the 3-point event. So definitely does not lack any confidence, but a confidence and swagger that I think this Minnesota Timberwolves team is going to need down the stretch, as there has been a lot of question marks surrounding this group on whether or not they're even that competitive going down the stretch here. And I think he brought that boost of energy this team was missing. And I think they're only going to get better once Anthony Edwards gets back into that mix along with Rudy Gobert. So I'm glad you pointed out Naz Reid, too, because that was on my list of notes to add. I mean, 26 points off the bench, 25 minutes. Hopefully he doesn't lose too much time, because I think he brings such a different element to that team when he's out there on the floor. And he can kind of handle it, too. I've been kind of surprised at how well he handles the ball, too, off the dribble.
They got a couple of real badasses on their team, boy. I mean, Naz, I would definitely describe as a badass. And Anthony Edwards, too.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys are legitimately tough-minded, tough physical individuals. So I think there's a really – I mean, look, I think that Gobert trade will end up, you know, costing them in the long run because they gave up so much to get him. But, I mean, right now, you don't want to play this team. I mean, who wants to play these guys?
No. And they got Karl Anthony Towns with fresh legs. I mean, obviously, he's been on the bench sideline, so he's anxious to get back out there. On the flip side, go ahead.
By the way, are we all in agreement now with Karl Anthony Towns saying he was the best 7-foot outside shooter, 3-point shooter, whatever? Are we all in agreement now that Kevin Durant is under 7 feet? Are we just going to call him 6'11" or six? No. We're fair in doing that. Kevin Durant isn't 7 foot. Is that what we're going with? Are we?
I think he's listed at 6'10", isn't he? I mean, if you look on the roster.
I've heard 7 foot. I've heard, you know. So I'm assuming this means he's legitimately not 7 feet. So there we go. We at least solved one puzzle by doing this.
Well, I'm assuming Kat doesn't know who Dirk Nowitzki is because I would take Dirk over Kat.
There's another one. There you go.
Yeah. And he's 7 foot for sure.
And I mean, look, I know I'm going back a little bit on this one. Patrick Ewing used to be able to shoot it a little bit, too. He wasn't shooting three-pointers, but he would take it outside, and he was pretty deadly from out there, too, but not so much from threes. I don't think he really was a three-point shooter.
Yeah. We had one against the Celtics there in the playoffs, Bruce, back in 1990 in Game 5. That
I can't hear you.
I didn't think you could.
Well, another notable star came back and returned in the Western Conference as well, and that was Ja Morant. And first question I have for you guys, and World B, I'll go ahead and start with you on this. Is there any point on bringing Ja Morant off the bench? I mean, is that really sending a message? What are your thoughts on Taylor Jenkins kind of starting him off the bench in his first game back?
Maybe he was looking to get some positive reinforcement as he comes in and gets the applause. I'm assuming that was one of the reasons. I mean, he didn't play a whole lot, so there was the way they're playing, there was no reason to keep him out of the starting lineup. But you know, he had good numbers in 24 minutes, 17 points, 4 rebounds, 5 assists. They were plus 11 when he was on the court. He's one of the best guys at driving the ball to the basket in the league. But I think he's second behind SGA in drives per game at like 21. He only had 14, but in just 24 minutes, he didn't have a turnover on the drives. So he still has that part of the game. He had the nice dunk that we saw on the one drive. He still displayed his 3-point prowess by going 0 for 2 from deep. So he still got that part of his game. And so it's a welcome return for the Grizzlies, who, just like Kat, they need everybody they can get at this point. They're missing that one factor we talked about. We mentioned before Bruce and I have in Steven Adams, but this is a big part of their resurgence, if you will.
When we did this show 3 days ago, Ross, you were sort of a little bit pissed off that he didn't play on Monday night because of conditioning. Yep. He looked like he was in pretty good condition on Wednesday night.
Yeah.
I mean, he looked like his usual self. I mean, he didn't look any different than he did when he was, you know, doing his normal thing. And look, I mean, the Rockets aren't really a joke anymore. I mean, you have to play hard to beat those guys. I mean, look, their record's not good, but we've talked a number of times about how players don't tank, organizations tank. And these guys are, you know, these guys are young and showing hunger. So Ja Morant's work product was never in doubt. The question is, did he get the wake-up call? And did he take it seriously? And he's saying all the right things. Is he now going to follow through? That remains to be seen. I want to give him the benefit of the doubt. Look, when they get Steven Adams back, if they get Steven Adams back, they're formidable, no doubt.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Ja Morant's in his fourth year in the league. Still one of the younger players in this league. I think we definitely need to give him the benefit of the doubt. It's exciting for the game to have him back. Obviously, he's one of the biggest jersey sales guys in the league and can definitely be a good role model for kids with his game if he sticks to just on the court performances and doesn't have that carried off the floor. So really hoping that he learned his lesson here. And I definitely think he's going to obviously play big dividends for the Grizzlies here down the stretch. I wouldn't be shocked if they pass my Sacramento Kings as far as just being the top two scariest teams along with Denver going into the playoffs. Because I think just having a guy like him back and now they've got some health with Desmond Bane, I think the sky's the limit once you also insert Steven Adams, which you guys have been both very passionate about here this season. So definitely things are looking up in Memphis here, and hopefully Adams will be back here shortly. As for our second quarter, I wanted to discuss the Los Angeles Lakers. They are making quite a final push here. They're 6-4 in their last 10 games, including a big home win over the Phoenix Suns on Wednesday night. And Bruce, what are your thoughts on the Lakers down the stretch?
I have so many thoughts about this team right now, most of them good. When they traded Russell Westbrook, they were 25-30. Since that trade, they're 11-7. Okay, that's number one. Sometimes we call that addition by subtraction. Okay, LeBron James was injured on February 26th. The team was 29-32. They're over 500. They're 7-5 since he's been out in the 12 games he's missed. My big question. And I know you want to talk a little about Austin Reeves, and I think we'll give this segment plenty of time to discuss that because there's a lot to talk about there. But here's what I want to see with LeBron. For his entire career, one of the reasons that I have always been such a huge fan of his was that as great a player as he was and in the way he can kind of do anything he wants on the court, he always wanted to empower his teammates and he always wanted to make them better. He would pass them. He would have confidence in them, whatever. But the way this team is going right now, he may have to sort of accept the fact that he's not the alpha dog now. Anthony Davis is looking like the alpha dog right now. And they're going to only go as far as Anthony Davis takes him. LeBron can be LeBron, but Anthony Davis is the secret sauce for that team, really, if they're going to go far. So will he be willing to become Robin to AD's Batman? I'm wondering what you guys think about that.
Will
be? I mean, I think he will. I think he would do that. I think they go as AD goes, but it's still going to revolve around LeBron. LeBron's going to have the ball in his hands. It'll be up to him to, you know, be his decision whether he wants it to be that way. I think he's always been a really good team player, so there's no reason to really expect it to go any other way. You know, there's an amazing thing about the Lakers. If they have Oklahoma City on Friday, if they win that game, they'll be 500 for the first time all season. That's amazing. They're 36-37 now. They haven't been 500 at any point all season. And they can get there, you know, by beating the Thunder in a huge game Friday for them. They won the close games. They've been in close games and they've won them. They, you know, this month, 8 of 11 games have been within 5 points. With 5 minutes to go, and you know they know how to play in these big games. They got their veterans to try and win it. I've been a fan of AD this month, where he's stepped up when he's been on the court. We talked about him missing a couple games ago there, but you know this month he's 26 points, 12 boards, shooting 55% from the field. He's even shooting 39% from three. But here's the big thing about him: he's taking just a little over one three per game. He's not taking a lot of threes. That's where his effectiveness is, taking the ball in the paint and doing damage, because he's got such an advantage with his quickness and his overall athleticism in that post. That's where he should be taking the ball, and that's where he is right now, and that's why he's been so effective this season, really.
Yeah, I'm actually going to counter that, World B. I think it's still LeBron's team, and I don't think he's willing to give it up. I think if anything, Anthony Davis is going to be LeBron's cop-out at an end of the game. If, you know, he wants to pass it off for the last second shot, he's going to be like, here, AD, you're either going to win it for us or I can blame it on you. I just think LeBron's not willing to give up that Batman role yet to become the Robin. But Anthony Davis, as you said, I don't have to, you know, go ahead and reiterate it. He has been spectacular for this team. I think the reason they're so close to reaching 500 for the first time all season long has been the emergence of Austin Reeves. I mean, this guy has become a breakout star there. He kind of reminds me a little bit of Kevin Huerter, just doesn't shoot the volume of three-point shots. I mean, you look at this guy's last couple of games, he had 25 points in their last win, as I mentioned, against the Phoenix Suns at home. A big game for those guys. 25 points, but he also did it with 11 assists. The game before that, he had 6 assists against the Magic. And then another big game on March 16th against Houston, he had 7 assists. So he's doing a really good job distributing the ball, creating shots for others, and using his offense to obviously free up others around him as defenses have to hold him more accountable. So I've been very pleased with Austin Reeves. I think he's certainly turning into quite a surprise in a much-needed role for this Lakers team. Of course, he is under a rookie contract. This team doesn't have a ton of money. Certainly hope this is a guy they hold on to and learn their mistakes from letting Alec Caruso leave town. Bruce, what are your thoughts on Austin Reeves?
Well, you know, in the 12 games since LeBron went down, here are Austin Reeves' numbers. This is just in the 12 games. 18.3 points per game, all right? 56.7% field goal percentage, okay? 41% on threes, which means he's shooting 65.2% on two-point shots, which means he's like crushing it in the mid-range. He's getting to the free throw line a ton. He's averaging 7.75 free throw attempts per game. That's a boatload of free throw attempts for a guy like Austin Reeves. And he's making them at about just under 84%. So this guy, his emergence as a starter has moved Beasley back to the bench. Dennis Schroeder's coming off the bench. These guys, all of a sudden, they've got a bunch of lethal guards on their team. Schroeder's averaging 12. Malik Beasley's averaging over 11. D'Angelo Russell on Wednesday night had 26 points. Now, you mentioned earlier that LeBron's going to have the ball in his hands a lot. I think the guy who's going to have a problem is D'Angelo Russell, because he's gotten very comfortable in that point guard role for these guys, and they've been winning. So now all of a sudden, and we know that he has a tendency to be a little bit of a knucklehead sometimes.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens with D'Angelo Russell when all of a sudden either his minutes are going to go down, which I would imagine they will, and his touches are going to go down. And we'll keep an eye on that situation a little bit. But you're totally correct, Ross. Austin Reeves has just been a real revelation for that team.
And you mentioned D'Angelo Russell. The thing that really concerns me moving forward, once LeBron comes back and the ball's in his hands, Austin Reeves is getting the ball a little bit more. Russell's defense is already very questionable. How committed is he going to be to the other end if he's not being involved in the offense? I mean, that's going to be really fun to watch, because I see him quitting if he's not being invested on the offensive side of the ball. So major concern there with D'Angelo Russell, but seeing the emergence of Austin Reeves, of course, we've talked a ton about Jared Vanderbilt. He doesn't put up always the sexiest numbers, but that guy is effective out there. They've got some real pieces here, and looks like they're going to be well-suited for a play-in spot here if they can get a big win over Oklahoma City. And, oh, let me make sure I mention the next two games after OKC are against Pat Bev and the Chicago Bulls. So that in itself should be a lot of fun too. I would like to say they have three big games coming up. And with that, we've reached our halftime buzzer. So we'll take a quick break and come back with you for the second half. And we're back with the start of our second half here. And for our third quarter, let's talk about Miami, because they are definitely heating up here, having won 7 of their last 10 games. Bruce?
Well, 7 of those 10 were at home, okay. And so that was definitely to their advantage. They're definitely, in fact, Brooklyn was beaten on Thursday evening by Cleveland. So now Miami is actually past them by a half a game. So as we put this thing to tape on Thursday night, Miami is now up to the sixth spot. They're a really weird team. They have three 20-point scorers on their team. They have Jimmy Butler. They have Bam Adebayo. They have Tyler Herro. So they got, you could call it a big three, but, you know, they're all averaging 20-plus. But they're a horrible offensive team. They're, like, dead last in the league in points scored. But here they are now, like, you know, six, seven games over 500, starting to play good ball when it matters the most. So we talk a lot about teams that have an identity and a culture. This team has an identity and they have a culture, because what you're seeing, how can they be successful when their offense is so bad? Well, they get to the free throw line. Okay. So even though they don't make a lot of buckets, they get to the free throw line. They're number two in the league in free throw attempts. And as a team, they make 83%, which is number two in the league. They are not a good rebounding team. They're 28th in total rebounds, but they allow the fewest offensive rebounds by opponents in the NBA, which means when they have a defensive possession, they secure the ball and they don't give up these easy putback points. So they're second best in the league in points allowed. Only Cleveland allows fewer. They take care of the defensive glass. They get to the free throw line. So they do the little things that helps you win those close games at the end. And by the way, Eric Spoelstra, he's going to the Hall of Fame. I mean, he's a Hall of Fame coach. So Miami is, I don't know if they've got enough to really make a big move in the postseason, but again, a team that you know they will never be swept in a series, no matter how much better the other team's record is. They'll make any series go six games, even if they don't win.
Yeah, too much heart there. And one thing that I've always kind of recognized with the Miami Heat, even as they stand here today, is they can trap teams into playing sloppy, ugly basketball. Might not be the prettiest game to watch, but that's kind of what they try to tempt you into, making it a sloppy game, keeping it close. And then down the stretch, they do have their closers. I mean, Jimmy Butler, in my opinion, is a closer. They've got Bam Adebayo, who's a defensive closer and turning into becoming an offensive closer. And then in a playoff series, they've got Kyle Lowry. I mean, he could string together a couple good games based on his veteran playoff experience. And then they've got the shooters. You mentioned Tyler Herro. They've got Max Strus. Gabe Vincent's another guy that's played some big minutes for them this year. They're a team I would not want to face in the first round, because, like, I just think they can make a series very ugly. And I agree with you, Bruce. I think it would go six at minimum. I think they're just the type of team that plays too hard, has too much heart, and won't go down easy. And if games turn ugly, I think that plays to their advantage. What's your thoughts, World B?
Well, let's not forget, this was a team that reached the final just a few seasons ago with the same group of players, only improved, really. Tyler Herro is a much better player. Bam hasn't gotten any worse. Jimmy Butler has been as steady as ever. So they're big guys. They're still there, and they still have the championship experience. The biggest thing for me with the Miami Heat, they're hitting three-pointers. They were one of the worst teams. They were the best team in the league last year hitting threes. At the All-Star break, they were one of the worst. They were 28th in three-point percentage. Now, during the last 13 games, they're hitting almost 39% of their threes. That's huge for them. For a team that is good at every other aspect, but so many other aspects of their game, three-point shooting was a miserable part of their game for most of the season. And Jimmy Butler is putting in one of the great runs here to close out the season that isn't getting talked about. Last 25 games, he's averaging about 25 points a game, 6 boards, 5 assists, 1.5 steals. He's shooting 55% from the field, and he's shooting 42% from three, and 85% from the line. And he gets to the line about 10 times a game. You talked about Austin Reed getting to the line. Jimmy Butler knows exactly how to get to the line as well as anybody in the league, and he's doing it, and he's hitting 85%. He stays healthy. He hasn't missed a game since late January, so he's played about 25 in a row with all this time management, load management, all this stuff. He's playing every game, and he's putting up the numbers every night. And he beat the Knicks on Wednesday night. I think they cheated, but I really haven't figured out just how yet. I'm still working on it. But that's a big win for them, and they got another matchup coming up later before the season's over in Madison Square Garden. So that could end up being a huge game for that fifth spot, as it turned out, the way the tide is turning in the Eastern Conference.
Their top three players have such complementary skills, what they bring out there. You mentioned Butler. The guy's a mid-range wizard, almost on a level of DeMar DeRozan, which is one of the reasons that he gets to the free throw line so much. He's not out there jacking up threes. He's working in the paint, and he gets fouled, and he knows how to get fouled. Bam Adebayo, as you mentioned, is probably the top defensive center in the league right now, but he's also a guy that the offense runs through quite frequently. He makes really good decisions with the ball in his hands, and he's super aggressive and a very heads-up player. And Tyler Hero is just simply a bucket. I mean, he's their best three-point shooter. He can be 1-for-12, and if he has the ball in the final seconds of the game, he wants the shot. He's not going to be one of these guys looking to pass it to somebody. He'll take that shot, and he's very, very good in those situations. So, good on them. I mean, look, I don't want to play them in the postseason. If they end up with the sixth spot and Philadelphia ends up in the three spot, Miami gets at least two games in that series, and who knows? I mean, they don't back down from anybody.
Nope. You play Miami, you're in for a dogfight. So should be interesting to see how that plays out as far as matchups are concerned. But as we head into our fourth quarter here, let's discuss the mayhem out west. And Bruce, I'll go ahead and start with you yet again to kind of break down what we have going on in the Western Conference.
Well, let me start with the injury to Paul George, PG-13. Injured on Tuesday, is likely out until the postseason, if there is a postseason for the Clippers at this point. They're fifth right now, but they're only two games in the loss column ahead of number 11 Utah, okay? So I don't know how they're going to replace his two-way skills. I mean, really, because of all the games that Kawhi Leonard has missed this year, I mean, he's their MVP. He's not replaceable. He, you know, there's nobody that's going to step into his shoes. So it's going to really be a tough assignment for those guys to maintain not only the fifth spot, but the sixth spot, maybe even the seventh or the eighth spot. I mean, I hope they can. I think, you know, I know World B has been a big fan of the Clippers all season long, and I want to see that team make the playoffs. But you know what? I mean, this guy is not going to be easily replaced, World.
No, he's not. It absolutely is not. They could easily fall into that mayhem that is the play-in field, the battle for the play-in thing. I mean, think about this. Entering Thursday, nine teams, 4 through 12, were separated by just three games in the loss column, and 6 through 12, which is seven teams, were separated by just one game in the loss column. It's an amazing thing that nobody has really stepped forward and taken control, or at least established themselves as a, you know, separate themselves from the rest of the pack. They're all in here. Think about this. This is a kind of an unbelievable thing, how much it changes. And after games on Sunday, last Sunday, the play-in field was Golden State, Oklahoma City, the Lakers, and Minnesota, with Utah and the Pelicans out. After Monday, it became Dallas, Minnesota, Oklahoma City, and Utah in, with the Lakers and the Pelicans out. After Tuesday, it was Dallas, Oklahoma City, Minnesota, Utah, the Lakers and Pelicans again out. And after games on Wednesday, it was Minnesota, then Oklahoma City, then Dallas, then the Lakers, with Utah back out again, and the Pelicans. We keep mentioning the Pelicans are out, but they're like a game away, one good two-game win streak away from being in. So it's just an amazing – we've talked about this for weeks now. This isn't just something that's happened. We saw it coming. We just kept waiting for a team or two to go on a run. And, all right, we eliminate them. And it's just not happening, and it's great. I love it.
Golden State's got a big two-game winning streak on the road, Russ. So maybe they're taking control.
Yeah, it's been a big, fun game of musical chairs, if you ask me. They just keep playing musical chairs with that play-in, and it's almost like a a Powerball. Who's in tonight? Who's out the next night?
You literally have to watch the standings and wake up every morning or whatever and look at the standings to see where the position is, because it will change.
Yeah. And I will say, Bruce, going back to the Paul George injury, one thing that the Clippers do have that I've talked about this year is they do have some depth, especially at the wing position. I even asked Ohm when we had him on it from ESPN in regards to that wing depth of why didn't they try to get another center? Well, now it seems like it makes sense. Terrence Mann's going to have to play better. They got to get Norman Powell back, which I believe he should be back here very soon. So that will be a welcome back addition to that team. And then they're going to need to get some big contributions from Amir Coffey. Amir Coffey's been a guy that's been in and out of that rotation. He's probably going to pick up some heavier minutes here soon. And then, of course, Kawhi Leonard's got to step up and continue to be available for games. But overall, yeah, the PG news is scary. And I wouldn't be too surprised if they missed the playoffs, if you ask me, because I think Paul George is that important to that team. Now, I do want to ask you both here, as we look at the Western Conference standings, as far as the Sacramento Kings are concerned, I would argue that they're in one of the best positions because they've been healthy all year. They know who they are, and they've been probably the most consistent Western Conference team this year. Do you agree or disagree with that take?
How can you not agree with that? I mean, it's clearly the case. I mean, they have a little bit of everything. I mean, they've got a, you know, let's start with their coach. Okay. Mike Brown has coached in the finals. He's coached in the playoffs. He's been the number one assistant to Steve Kerr for, you know, a number of championship seasons. Okay. They've got a mini Jokic at center in Domantas Sabonis, who's the closest thing to Jokic you're going to see right now in the NBA. Okay. They've got, you know, veteran guys like Harrison Barnes. They don't have playoff experience as a group, but they have a lot of individual guys who have playoff experience. They've got guys coming off the bench, you know, Malik Monk, Davion Mitchell, that are good players. They kind of got their butts kicked the other night by Boston, but, you know, Kevin Herter didn't play in that game. And, you know, you can have a stinker of a game once in a while. I mean, you know, Boston was just on its game that night. So I would agree with you. I think as we've discussed before, and I'm sure World has numbers to back this up, defensively, their numbers don't look great because they give up a lot of points, but they also score a lot of points. So I think some of that defensive numbers is a little bit, you know, a result of the fact that they like to play at a fast pace, run up and down the court, put up a lot of points. So, you know, generally you're not going to be allowing the fewest points in the league when you play with such pace.
No, that's true. And I would agree with that. I think there's different philosophies that you can have. There's only three teams that rank in the top 10 in offensive efficiency and defensive efficiency. It's the Cavaliers, the Celtics, and the 76ers. So after that, it's which style you're going to play. You're going to play like the Kings and you're going to give up on defense, or are you going to play another style? You know, you're going to play more defensive and like the Milwaukee Bucks basically for most of the season and give up a little bit on the offensive end. So yeah, there's only three teams that are that consistent and the rest are playing one way or the other. I would disagree though. And I would say in terms of the most consistent team in the West from start to finish, I'd say it's Denver. I know they haven't had a good run of late, but when was the last time they were out of first? When was the last time they were seriously challenged for first place? It's been a long time. So they had a little bit of a slump in March, in the beginning of March, where they lost, what, five in a row, four in a row? And they have, you know, there are some problem areas, or there's some worrisome areas if you are a fan of the Nuggets about going forward. And they will have a lot of pressure on them, probably more pressure than anybody to get to the finals based on having potentially the three-time MVP in Jokic. And just the fact that they've had so many good seasons and haven't really had anything to show for it. But from start to finish in the West, I'd say it'd be Denver.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue against the record. I think the two things holding me back on the Denver Nuggets is Michael Porter Jr. Mm-hmm. And where he's at in the graces of Mike Malone, or maybe even just his game-to-game performances. And then the other one would be even my own guy, Aaron Gordon. Got off to a very hot start to start the season. I was arguing he should have been an all-star. He's had a back and forth second half of the season. So those are the two guys that are very important factors to that team that I'm not 100% sold on what they'll be like come playoff time. And, you know, I agree. Obviously, with the Sacramento Kings, they know their flaws in the defense. They love to play at a fast pace. But as you mentioned, Bruce, by honoring Sabonis with the nickname, you know, Mini Joker, if they do have to slow the pace down and play a half-court set, it's nice to have Sabonis kind of being the initiator of that offense, being such a good passer, a guy that can play at a slower rate of speed as well and kind of adjust just like Jokic himself. I mean, I think having Sabonis as your main key offensive piece, the center guy that you can work your offense around with Fox, I think if the pace of a playoff game slows down, the Kings will still be in good shape.
And you just mentioned De'Aaron Fox for the first time in this discussion. I mean, that dude is spectacular. I mean, you know, so at any given time, particularly late in games, he could just like detonate and explode for, you know, 8, 10, 12 points in a hurry. So they've got a little bit of everything. I mean, they've got a nice home court advantage. They've got great fans. So, yeah, I mean, look, they're, you know, they've been excellent all year.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of De'Aaron Fox down the stretch. I've been so impressed with him this season. I think, you know, he's fourth quarter Fox. That's his nickname now. And in the playoffs, you need a guy. We were just talking about how Jimmy Butler is the closer with the Heat. Well, in Sacramento, when the game is tight or you need points to stop a rally or start a rally, you give it to De'Aaron Fox. He's been the go guy in the fourth quarter. So they have that piece of the game that they have. They have a score in the fourth quarter when you need it to go along with the rest of their players. So, yeah, there's a lot to like about Sacramento. My comment about Denver had nothing to do with the fact that I'm not a Kings fan, because I am. And I'm not necessarily even that big of a Nuggets fan in terms of going forward in the postseason. I was just saying from start to finish, they've been the most consistent team. But if you get to a seven-game series right now, I bet you more people would take the Kings than would take Denver.
You think so? Wow.
I think so. I mean, the way they're playing right now, absolutely.
Denver's so good at home, though. I mean, as long as they have the home court, they're going to, you know, that's home court is a bigger home court advantage than most anyone else's home court, of course, because of playing in the altitude.
Yep. Good point there, Bruce. So buckle up, NBA fans. The Western Conference musical chairs will continue here until the very end of this season. And with that, this is a perfect segue talking about the Kings. Let's get to my best bets. And tonight I'm going to share my
favorite. Can I call a timeout here?
Timeout, yep.
I want to hear from you guys about what happened in that Dallas Golden State game
with that crazy situation
at the end of the, you know, towards the end. How messed up was that? I mean, I've watched that thing a bunch of times, and yep. I have from my original observation about what happened there, I now have a totally different observation about what happened there. Dallas needs to shut up. They screwed up. It's their fault that that happened. It's not the referee's fault that that happened. Their coaching staff needs to shoulder some of the blame for that, because if you go back and look at it, the referee pointed Golden State ball. Then he pointed to Dallas because they called a timeout. Golden State knew where to be after the timeout. Why didn't Dallas know where to be after the timeout? Mark Cuban, I love him. He's probably one of my favorite owners. He's a wonderful human being. I have total respect for him. But he should be, you know, talking to his coaching staff about that, not protesting that game, which, by the way, he won't win that protest, fellas. What do you all think about that old deal?
Dallas fell asleep. I mean, that's just how they fell asleep. How can they argue the situation that they thought it was their ball or something like that? They were all down at the other end.
Yep.
There wasn't one person. If they thought it was their ball, there's somebody to inbound the ball and there's somebody to catch the inbound. Nobody was there. Everybody was down at the other end of the court because they thought exactly how it was. So I don't know where they exactly have the argument here with this. They fell asleep at the end of the day. They can put it, everybody, players, coaches, whatever, fell asleep. Weren't paying. Somebody wasn't paying. That one person was paying attention to what was going on.
Totally agree with you there. I mean, you got to know two things. Who are you guarding? One, and maybe more importantly, where's the basketball? Well, wouldn't you just follow? You got to read the room a little bit here, right? Like the ball's down there. The referee's holding it here. All the refs are positioned down there. It's like, hello, somebody wake up here. So silly protest. Obviously, someone fell asleep. Nothing's going to happen with this one, but definitely a very odd situation. And good challenge by Bruce there to call the quick timeout to be sure we did discuss that on tonight's show. So well done there, Bruce.
No problem at all. Happy to help.
And with that, we'll now get into my best bets here, and I'll share my favorite Sacramento Kings same game parlay. It has four legs, so it's keeping things very short and sweet here. Sabonis, you can add him for 15 points. He's done that in 8 of his last 10 games. I like Sabonis for 5 assists, in which he's done that in 9 of his last 10 games. Keegan Murray, 2 3-pointers. He's done that in 7 of his last 10 games. And lastly, just to kind of boost it into the plus odds here, De'Aaron Fox, fourth quarter Fox, for 1 3-pointer. He's done that in 7 of 10 games. He's a little hit or miss with that, but you got to throw some odds out there to get something in return. So that is my four-leg same-game parlay for the Sacramento Kings. And with that, we'll get right into our final thoughts. And Bruce, we'll start off with you.
Thank you, Ross. The Philadelphia 76ers have been on fire for 3 straight months. Since December 9th, they're 37-11. That is the best record in the league during that stretch. Joel Embiid is favored by many to win the MVP, and James Harden has transformed his game for the better. Doc Rivers has always known how to coach stars, and he's got those two performing at peak level. There are a lot of quality teammates with the big two. Tobias Harris looks the best he has in years. Tyrese Maxey and De'Anthony Melton are playing great. But as hot as the Sixers have been, they're living in a tough neighborhood with Boston and Milwaukee. And they're going to need a serious closing kick if they want the number 2 spot in the East. I think their next 3 games are going to show us who they are. Friday, they're at Golden State, where the Dubs rarely lose. Then a back-to-back on Saturday in Phoenix. And after an off day on Sunday, they're at Denver on Monday, Jokic versus Embiid, where the altitude is always a challenge, as we mentioned before, especially for a team playing its 3rd game in 4 days. They can't afford to go 0-3. 1-2 would suck a bit less, but would be understandable. 2-1 would mean that 2nd place is still in the mix, and 3-0 would mean that we're looking at a serious championship contender and a probable MVP if Embiid outplays Jokic.
Totally agree with you there, Bruce. Good points. World B.
The New York Knicks. I started with a story about the great Willis Reed. I'm going to end with a story about the current state of the Knicks, which is not good at the moment. With Thursday's loss to the Magic, they are now 3-6 in the last 9 games following the 9-game winning streak. And the number 5 spot, which they seem so secure, is not definite anymore. We used to think with the Knicks, could they possibly get to the 4th spot? Well, now we have to worry with New York is whether they can maintain the 5th spot, and in which case, can they actually even hold on to the 6th spot the way things are going? We thought they had a schedule that was favorable down the stretch when they have to play coming up Houston, Miami at home. They have Cleveland coming up. They have Washington. They have 2 versus Indiana and another against the Pelicans. Everything seemed favorable from their end, but all of a sudden, a loss on the road to Orlando on Thursday leaves everything up in the air. So while the Knicks are having a good season, having a winning season once again under Tom Thibodeau, nothing's guaranteed for this team coming down the stretch.
Well said there, World. And for my final thought, I got one that's close to my heart. I want to give some love and a special birthday shout out to my daughter, Kenzie, who turns 1 today. And boy, does time fly. I feel like it wasn't that long ago I was texting you, Bruce, about having to cancel an upcoming ColorCast NBA broadcast that we planned on doing together. She's been growing up way too fast, and I'm certainly lucky to be her father. The scouting report on her after year 1 is that she can brighten anyone's day with her nonstop smiling face, and she's never met a meal that she didn't like. So happy birthday, Kenzie, and your dad loves you. And
happy birthday, Kenzie. Thanks, when does guys. Dad? When does Dad buy her the Nerf hoop for the living room?
Oh, we already got that. Don't worry about that. That's already installed. Dad plays with it all the time. It's my favorite toy. But with that, that will do it for this edition of the 48 Minutes Podcast on Believe. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back with you next week to be sure you're up to date in 48 on all things around the association. Have a great weekend, everybody.